welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, and this is the Divorce Show. We just had Dr. Sharon, of course, the first hour of the Divorce Show, 2 to 3, and now we have one of my favorite attorneys, if not my favorite attorney, Joe Collins. Joe, how are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
I am great. Of course, we go back a long way.
Oh, yeah.
You have a great firm. You know I know that. I refer stuff to you because... I mean, what you know, I'm going to just say what's unique about your firm, and then let's talk a little bit about it, and then we'll get into the show, you know, how a divorce works. That's a theme today. I think it's really important for people to know that. But how I would describe your firm is it's sort of like a family atmosphere with great sophistication. I mean, I look at it because you always make people feel so good, you, your brother, and your dad, I mean, and of course, your staff. But there's great sophistication. It's almost like the perception of a country attorney where from the old days where they were just so gracious, compassionate. How do you see it?
Well, yeah, it's my dad's kind of theory when we started. He always kind of touts himself as the old country lawyer.
Yeah.
You know, and we pride ourselves at having somebody answer the phone. You don't have a computer system answering it. We try to give personal service.
Yep.
Try to care about people. Try to leave our clients better off than when they came in the door. I think that's the most important thing because we see people at their worst and not at their best. Try to help them and like I say, put them better off. Sometimes they don't think they're better off, but
but they are.
But hopefully they are. Yes.
Well, the legal system can get sort of complex or really complex, and just like the tax code, it's like. You know, where do you start? Unless you have an expert or someone that really knows, it's tough. It's
so,
very tough.
So what is that? The CPAs and lawyers got together for job security? And
I think so.
They said, let's make that tax code or the law as complicated as we can?
There's no question about that. I think that's exactly what they do up in Washington. However, tell us a little bit about the firm in terms of where you focus your attention, some of your concentration of work. And I know a lot of it is with family law.
Yeah, we probably do 60-70% family law. You know, as a small firm, that's kind of what pays the bills, and we really enjoy it. Family law encompasses such a wide variety of topics. It has, property issues, sometimes criminal issues. You know, it really spills out into a lot of different areas. We do a little bit of criminal and civil and some other things, but the other attorneys in the firm, you know, they like the commercial aspect of it. We like the civil litigation sometimes. It's not always as civil as everybody thinks it is.
But that's right.
But family law is probably the most rewarding. You know, I tell my clients sometimes I feel like I've got 400 kids. Because everybody, you know, when you do custody cases, you feel like they're your own kids and you're out there trying to protect them. So that's kind of where our focus has been.
And you're quite a family guy yourself, as well as, of course, your dad, your brother, and you have a big family. How do you, as an attorney, focusing in family law, custody issues, for example, is it hard sometimes to not get emotionally involved? I mean, some of the cases must be heartbreaking.
Oh, they definitely are. The most difficult part about it, I don't have such a problem with it as some other attorneys, but when you have clients that come in, and especially when there's been abuse or other issues, it's heartbreaking. And I've got four kids of my own.
Yeah.
And so when you have a case involving children, you go home and try to love your kids more. Yeah. You're a little more sensitive to those issues at home, so it can be pretty tough. But you compartmentalize and try to separate yourself from what you do at work. I tell my wife when I get home, she got to give me some time to turn off the lawyer so I can become a real normal person. Yeah. So
that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it can be tough. But, you know, for the most part, you feel rewarded that you're helping somebody out. When you sit your client down and say, you're doing something bad, you need to stop. So,
yeah, that's really cool. So, you know, how do you select clients? I mean, I as a CPA will look at clients it's really important to me about, you know, how well we'll work together, their integrity level, their honesty level. How do you do that?
Well, people that come into the office, they're always, you never see them at their best. They're always at their worst. They always have a problem or they're dealing with things. So I try not to use that or say, well, you're not going to be my client because you're having a difficult time or you've done something wrong. I for the most part, represent just about anybody that wants to hire me. But it does get, at some point in representation, if somebody lies to you or doesn't tell you the truth, that you just have to say, I'm sorry, we can't help you anymore.
Exactly. That's what I was really referring to, because that, I mean, that really really inhibits you to do your job if that happens.
Well, and that kind of goes along with the theme today, you know, how a divorce works. The first really topic you talk about is attorney-client privilege. And the attorney-client privilege is supposed to protect whatever you, for example, if you were my client, were to tell me, come in and tell me you've committed a crime.
Yeah.
And that's privileged. And the idea behind that is so that you can give me full disclosure so I know everything that's going on, so I can help you with what's going on in your life. If I don't know what's going on, very much like a doctor, you know, if I don't know where it hurts or what history you may have, even though it may be embarrassing or problematic, it's difficult to help you out. So that attorney-client privilege is very, very, very important when it comes to representing a client. So, I mean, there are exceptions to the rule, but for the most part, anything you tell a lawyer is confidential. You know, you cannot disclose it to a third party without your permission.
And that's very, very important, as you said.
Oh, yeah. Like you say, if a client's not telling you what's going on, it's very difficult to represent them. They could come in, not tell you something, and you're standing in front of the judge, and the other side gets that information out before you know it. There's a problem.
How about conversations, cell phones, those type of things? How do you handle that?
Well, for the most part, that's not a problem. But if it's something very sensitive in nature, I don't know if anybody remembers, was it Newt Gingrich a number of years back, whose cell phone call was intercepted about something? I can't remember even the topic, but it was all over the news.
Because it was probably about women.
Probably. But cell phone's not secure. You can listen to it on a regular, you know, ham radio or something like that if you get the frequency right. Now it's different. Digital cell phones nowadays are still a little more, but you can still pick them up and listen to them. So, yeah, whenever I tell a client, if it's sensitive information, it's something that you don't want to share with the public, you better call me on a landline, because I want to make sure we can keep that confidential. I don't want and it's not likely somebody's going to listen. I mean, with billions of people in the world, millions, and I don't know, what's the population of Phoenix? It's not likely somebody's sitting there.
Like huge, like 3-4 million maybe, right?
Yeah, it's not likely that your ex-spouse or whatever sitting out there with the radio in the parking lot trying to pick up our cell phone call. But, you know, it's just better to be safe than sorry, because you never know. I'm sure Newt Gingrich, you know, he didn't think anybody was going to be listening in, and then all of a sudden it came out, and, you know. We all know what happened there, so.
Well, especially politicians, I bet they have to be really careful. Everyone wants to, you know, go after them.
Oh yeah, they're political opponents. People that don't like them. Yeah, it's you live in a fishbowl.
You're
a politician.
No question about it. So the client attorney privilege, very, very important. Now, how about some of the concepts here? You got divorce. There's legal separations. There's annulment. What are some of the differences?
Well. When anybody comes in, the first thing they ask for, tell me about a divorce. And there are other options. You don't necessarily have to get divorced. I mean, I know people that are having financial troubles or other issues. They still love their spouse. They want to stay married, but because of the financial issues, they feel obligated to do something. For example, I knew a couple that got divorced because the wife didn't qualify for SSI. And so they divorced rather than, and one of the options is a legal separation. And a legal separation is basically... it's very similar to a divorce in that you divide your debts and assets and custody and access and all that stuff can be dealt with, but the marriage is not terminated. You stay married. The premise is that you want to live separate and apart. You want to have separate financial circumstances or you want to separate the finances, but you're still married. And at any time after the decree of legal separation is entered, you can go back and say, we don't want to be legally separated anymore. We want to get back together. We want to merge like we were before, stay married, have the marital community existent again. And I've had couples do that, to get divorced and come back later and say, let's dismiss the legal separation. We're worked through our issues. Everything's fine, and you could do that. Legal separation is also something I've seen a lot of religious people do because they don't believe in divorce.
Gotcha.
So it's another option for others, and I think it's a good thing. I think if somebody says, look, we have financial issues, but we still want to stay married and work on that marriage, but I don't want to have the negative implications if my spouse were to go get into debt that I don't agree with. So a legal separation is one of the things.
So the date of the legal separation would then say that, hey, any debt you incur, you're responsible for?
Right, just like in a divorce.
Gotcha.
We call them dissolutions in Arizona, but, you know, divorce, just like a divorce, it's the same thing. Now, an annulment, That's a completely different animal. Annulment is where the court enters a decree saying that the marriage never happened. So,
wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
First of all, I guess there's so many questions I have with this. One would be, is there a time frame in which you could say it never happened?
Well, you know, the court, with all its power and wisdom, waves its magic wand, and that takes care of that problem. But no, there you have to meet the legal requirement for an annulment. And there's not many, but generally there's an impediment to consummating the marriage, fraud, an inducement in the marriage. So, you know, if somebody gets married and you can't just fail to consummate the marriage, there's got to be something more there. I didn't tell you that I had a mental illness and we get married and you can annul it. So meeting the standard for an annulment is a very difficult, standard. They don't like to do that very often. And generally, there isn't a statutory time period that I've ever seen. But if you've been married to somebody for 5-6 years, going in and saying, I didn't know that they had a mental illness is a little more difficult to do. But so, you know, usually annulments occur very frequent, very close to the actual marriage happening. So
that's interesting. Yeah, you see it on TV sometimes and maybe even hear it on the news. But I've never known anyone to get an annulment.
In my 15 years, I've done 2 of them.
Really? So it's not very common.
Not very common at all.
And is it a battle? Do both parties usually want it, or one says, what, you want to get annulled?
Well, in the 2 that I've been involved with, they were uncontested, so pretty much everybody agreed that that's what ought to happen. So,
wow, it's probably one of those cases where, like, what was I thinking? Yeah. I woke up and got married, and...
We don't have a 3-day right of rescission on marriage in Arizona. So.
See, that would be good.
Yeah.
I would suggest like a 3-year right of rescission.
There we go.
That would be good. Why don't we take a quick break, and we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Joe Collins from Collins & Collins Law Firm. Phenomenal attorneys. I'll tell you, I'm going to give out your phone number, 602-788-7227, and that's 602-788-7227. Joe Collins in the house. This is the Divorce Show. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion really about the process of divorce. What comes up, you know, sadly, if you need to have advice, listen up. We'll be right back.
Your body is the greatest gift that you will ever be given. How well are you taking care of yours? Hey everyone, this is Journey Reeves, owner of Mind Body Unlimited. More important than time or money, your health is the secret to a truly wealthy life. We can customize an exercise and diet program that greatly enhances your quality of life. If you are sick and tired of feeling sick and tired, give us a buzz at 480-370-7768. That's 480-370-7768 to schedule your free, no-obligation consultation today.
Are you standing at a crossroad in life wondering what's next? Is it time to reinvent your relationship, your career, your life? Whether you're ready for a reinvention revolution or a reinvention evolution, the support of a couple of great coaches can get you there. When you decide it's time to take your life from just functional to optimal, call Joe and Lori Battaglia of Living the Dream Coaches, 888-505-5762. That's 888-505-5762, or go online to www.livingthedreamcoaches.com. That's www.livingthedreamcoaches.com.
At Beerham Baum & Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum & Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
And Welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, and this is the Divorce Show every third Tuesday from 2 to 3 and 3 to 4. And, of course, we're in the 3 to 4 section right now, and this is Joe Collins from Collins. And Collins, great family law attorneys and more, though.
Yep, we try to help people out. So
yeah, no doubt. And why don't we give your website out? Do you have your website out?
Yeah, it's real simple, collinslaw.net. You know, wow. www.collinslaw.net. Couldn't get that .com. They were all taken away. So
collinslaw.net. That's really easy to remember.
Yep, and it goes, the email's just the same, joecollins@collinslaw.net. Pretty simple.
Very cool. I'll give out the phone number too, 602-788-7227. Call Joe. And, of course, like I said, every third Tuesday from 2 to 3, we have Dr. Sharon, a great psychologist, talking about certain aspects of divorce, pre, post, during the divorce, impact on both parents, the couple, the soon-to-be ex-couples, you name it. And, of course, Joe will be talking about the legal aspects. Maybe we'll talk some financial tax at some point, because it's all integrated, isn't it?
Oh, yes. I tell you, one of the things that impacts a person's life more than divorce, I don't know what, because, I mean, it just can be devastating, or it can be, I don't know about a good experience, but it can be less than terrible. I mean, I know a lot of couples that they work through it just fine, but I was sitting in front of a judge today, and he told me, he says, you know, so we've had these people volunteer for settlement conferences, and they won't do it anymore because people are getting so mean and nasty in divorce. And I thought, that's really kind of ridiculous. I mean, people need to grow up, be adults about life. So,
well, there's probably a lot of hurt, a lot of anger, maybe a revenge motivation. Is that possible?
Yeah, oh, most definitely. Oh. But I think if some people represent themselves, and obviously as an attorney, I don't think that's smart. I think it was Oliver Wendell Holmes who said, he who represents himself has a fool for a client.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah.
I could have quoted that wrong, but the theory, the statement's true. You know, if you represent yourself, you clearly have a fool for a client because the emotion gets in the way. It's just tough. So, you know, spend a little bit of money to get it done right in the beginning. You know, at least if you don't spend the money, at least go talk to somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, later on we'll talk about some resources for people who can't afford to hire an attorney. I've got a few places, but, you know, the first thing that people need to understand, and I think that one of the things that causes the most fear is unknown.
Yeah.
How does it work? What is it that I'm supposed to do, or how is this going to function? And we've kind of put divorce in the same aspect as civil lawsuits. I mean, it kind of functions similar to civil lawsuits, but it's completely different. So when you file for divorce, you file a summons and a complaint just like you would in a civil case. And so we plead the case. This is when we got married. This is when, you know, we have children or we have assets. We're very, very nonspecific about that type of stuff. And then you have to serve your spouse. So somebody, a process server, shows up at the door, you know, knock, 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 and they've got papers. Very scary if you don't know that it's coming. So, you know, I just talk to my clients and they come and say, okay, does your spouse know you want a divorce? Because that's a shock.
That could be a huge shock if you think things are going well.
Oh,
has
yes.
that ever happened?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I've had
I can't even imagine.
Clients come to me who have been served. You know, I got these papers. I thought everything was fine.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, what do I do? I don't know what to do. And so you have to deal with the emotional side of that. I mean, sometimes we as lawyers are more therapists than anything. So find somebody like Dr. Sharon, because it's very difficult sometimes to deal with an emotional client.
That blows me away. I mean, not knowing, and what, they're living at the same house?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
I would hate to be there that night as when they come home.
Oh, well, and that's something we deal with all the time. People can't keep their anger in check, so what do you do? Then you have an order of protection. And we'll talk maybe in a different show about domestic violence, but, I mean, that can be a huge issue. I mean, there are some people that know it's coming.
Yeah.
They just kind of expect it's coming. They get the knock on the door, and the process server's there, and go, oh, well, she didn't tell me about it, but I knew things weren't good. So.
But even if you know it's coming, it's got to be emotionally
most
devastating.
Definitely.
Either way.
Oh, most. It's because it's legal paperwork.
Yeah, and it's real, and now you got to sort of expose your life to like a judge and stuff like that. And
Yeah, definitely. And then there's lots of papers. I'll tell you, when you file a civil case, there's three different documents when you file. When you file for divorce, there's like seven or eight.
Oh, geez.
Oh, man, there's the summons and the complaint and the parent information program class, and then there's the preliminary injunction, and then there's the cover sheet, and then there's the notice to creditors. And, I mean, it's just everybody wonders why it's so expensive to get a divorce. So it's of paperwork.
The legal system, what can you do? And now let me ask you this. Some listeners right now might be curious about, well, should you have the same attorney for a divorce? Does it cost less that way? Is it advisable? And I guess it's a case by case. It's a conflict of interest, but you got to waive it, right?
It really depends on the case. If you and your spouse could get an agreement, we both agree that this ought to be what happens, then I would say, okay, we could probably help you out. But the problem is if you say you agree to everything, and then the lawyer, of course, we like to open up that can of worms. You come to us and say, we agree on A, B, and C, and we tell you, well, what about F, G, and X, and all the other stuff? Oh, we didn't think about that.
Yeah.
And so now there may be other disputes. And if you have an attorney that represents both parties, he has an ethical obligation to both parties.
Yeah, that makes it tough, doesn't it?
Oh, most definitely, because what I tell you may be different than what I want to tell your spouse.
Yeah.
It may be in your best interest to do one thing. When, for example, if you have a husband and a wife, husband works, he makes all the money. Wife stays at home and works just as hard taking care of the kids, but doesn't get paid for it. And they get divorced and they want to file their taxes, and it may be to the advantage of the wife to file and claim the kids as an earned income credit. She'll get a huge, huge refund. But for the husband, it's better to file a joint return because it'll reduce his liability.
Yeah.
So now I've got a conflicting advice problem. I have to tell one thing. So I have to tell the parties if they come in jointly and say, look, I may give you guys different advice.
Oh, jeez.
And if you can't settle it, I can't represent either one of you. And then you'll go spend more money hiring separate attorneys.
So it's a tough situation.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
It is. And you want to make sure you know that in advance if you're going to use the same. Now, it can save money if you both agree. But it sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes, if you both agree, it might be worth spending a little more money to hire two attorneys to just look and say, okay, these are your rights, these are your rights. Now, I tell all people, even people who aren't represented by an attorney, I have ethics. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to tell you something that's not true. But I'm going to look out for my client and not you. So if I'm going to talk to you and we're negotiating, don't think I'm looking out for your interest.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I definitely try to be straightforward with people and not tell them something, you know, because they might think I'm, you know, looking out for them. And that's definitely not what's happening.
Let me ask you this. I always was curious about this is behind the scenes, or really not behind the scenes, but let's say both parties have an attorney. It appears to me, I'm not an expert by any means, but it appears to me you see it in the movies, you see it, you know, sometimes in real life. How's the relationship with the other attorney? I mean, it can be a battle, but is it almost like a sporting event where you're going against another boxer or in hockey, of course, tonight, the great Phoenix Coyotes against the Kings in the conference finals round 2 tonight, jobbing.com arena.
I'm getting
the plug.
Let's put that plug there.
Yeah, but you know, and then afterwards, what I always like about hockey, they shake hands after someone wins the round, that particular playoff. Is it like that with attorneys? You battle, or sometimes you just battle so much, hey, I don't like this attorney.
Yeah, they call it sportsmanship in sports, and in the legal profession, they call it professionalism.
Yeah.
You should be able to fight in the courtroom, have the knockdown, drag outs. We don't agree. Here's the law. And then when you're done, shake hands and, you know, go have a drink together. But it frequently doesn't happen because many attorneys take it very personal.
Really? That's interesting, I think.
Yeah, I wouldn't say many, but there are some out there that I don't care for because they have that attitude. But there are many attorneys that I have had different cases on, many cases, guys that have been practicing law a long time. I get along great with them. I could call them up and, you know, hey, so-and-so, I think your client's a jerk. And he goes, well, I think your client's a jerk. I say, okay, well, you know, great. Let's go to court and, you know, or we'll call each other up and say, well, we ought to settle this case. Well, I wish we could, but my client won't agree. And we, as the attorneys, agree as to what ought to happen. But,
yeah.
But we can, you know, it's the clients that have to make that decision. And we as attorneys should be able to walk out of the courtroom, shake hands, and still be friends. Because we're going to have more cases with each other down the road.
Yeah.
But it doesn't always happen, which is unfortunate. But for the most part, I think the younger lawyers that I've seen are getting better at that. There's the state bar offers a professionalism course that lawyers are required to take. tries to teach them that. Let's be good sports about these things.
Really? That's a very interesting subject right there. But, of course, if you went on one against Gloria Allred, I don't know about that. She seems pretty tough, right?
Well, even if they're tough, as long as they're professional, it shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah,
I mean, I've had issues where we've all been tough and we've argued our client's position and you lose or you win.
Yeah.
And then you should be able to walk out the door. And you know, good attorneys, they get along, even though they don't always agree, or their clients don't always agree, should be a better term for it.
How about the opposing attorney's client, which is, of course, you're going against them too. Do they give you like glaring looks, or do they ever try to contact you, which I think they're not allowed to?
They're not allowed to. Well, it's not that they're not allowed to. It's the ethics don't allow you to speak with them if they're represented by an attorney.
Oh.
But I've had clients do that.
They want to call you.
Well, either call or email is the big one nowadays. And so, and you know, many times when you email the other attorney, you copy your client on it. So when you go to reply to the attorney, sometimes you inadvertently include their client's email address.
Oh,
and
no.
So I try to blind copy so that doesn't happen. But, you know, so frequently your client or the other side, they see you as the enemy.
Yeah.
They see that other attorney as the enemy. And so they don't want you to be nice to that attorney. You know, I've had a client say, I don't pay you to be nice to them. Well, you're going to spend more money if I'm mean to them.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
If I'm nice, we'll get things done.
Yeah.
You know, but no, they don't understand that. So, yeah, glaring looks. I've had some that are very nice. They'll come shake your hand, and they understand the whole thing. But there are some, they just want you to be mean. So, you know, when you start emailing, sometimes, you know, you'll get an email from another attorney, and I'll have to admit, I've been guilty of this. You'll send an email to the other attorney that's not directed at the other attorney, but more directed at the other attorney's client.
Oh, gotcha.
So you'll put something in the letter that you know is going to get to the other attorney's client, so your client's happy with that. I'm not sure that's you try to maintain professionalism, so you don't be unprofessional about it, but you know, when you talk about who gets custody of the cat, so to speak, you know, you may put something in there that the other party, and it's not necessarily directed at the other attorney, but you know his client's going to see it. So
it's all negotiations, all setting up the case for the benefit of your client.
Yeah, most definitely. But but sometimes those clients, they're so hurt and emotional that they just have a difficult time with it.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's very difficult for these clients is because once you get served, then there's, you know, the answer period. You may not get to trial in that case for 6, 8, 9, 10 months.
Oh, that's a long time. Oh, is there a big waiting list right now?
Well, it depends on the judge. I was in front of a judge this morning, and we set trial in October. A 2-hour trial in October was his first available date.
Why? How is that? They're just shorthanded, or it's a popular judge, or how does that work?
Just shorthanded. In Maricopa County, we are short judges. The Constitution requires, you know, so many judges per population, and we're, I think, 25, 30 judges short.
Oh, my gosh.
So
how is that possible?
It's money. All money. We can't afford to hire them, and even if we had them, where would we put them?
Oh, man.
And, you know, most of the family court judges have 900, 1,000, 1,300 cases assigned to them. Now, there's some judges that'll get you in for a trial in 2 months.
Oh.
And they'll tell you they manage their case calendars better than other judges, but it's just that some judges are just busier than others. A judge will retire, and they'll take all of his cases and split them between the other judges.
So here's the big question. We talked about getting along with attorneys. And you can answer this or maybe not, but he knows what I'm going to ask.
Yeah, I do.
And it's perfectly fine if you're not allowed to say anything, but I'm just curious about, you know, there's probably some judges you really think are fair, and you don't, obviously, you can't mention names, but can you answer maybe even, are there some, you know, how do you handle judges where you say, wow, that judge isn't doing anything that seems reasonable?
There are some judges I understand what they're doing.
Oh, okay.
There are some judges I have no clue.
That's a good way to put it. Okay.
But I think for the most part, I respect all of the judges. I've had judges that I vehemently disagree with. And I've always been taught you can say whatever you want as long as you do it in a proper manner. And I've tried to do that. And they've disagreed with me and told me that they disagree with me.
And they're the sort of the final authority, right?
And they're the judge. And so they get the big bucks to make the tough decisions. Whoa. And I advocate for my client. And I can always go up on appeal. But
oh, you can.
Yeah, appeals are tough. Tough. You know, only about 10% of appeals are successful. So.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Those trial judges have a lot of power. And they do, and I'll tell you, every judge that I've ever met, even though I may not like them or agree with what they've done, I think they all try very hard to do what's right.
Okay, that's good.
At least
know.
What they believe is right.
Yeah.
And the law, the problem you get with the law is it's very easy to divide something when the law says You divide that 50-50. That's easy to do.
Sure.
But when you start talking about custody, it's just difficult to say, okay, you can't divide a kid 50-50.
No.
And so they have to deal with a lot of different things. It's easy to disagree with what they do. And they'll, judges will tell you, I don't know these people other than what I hear in court.
Yeah.
That's why they encourage settlement so much, because people know their kids and their family better than that judge does. But if the judge has to make the decision, he'll do the best he can.
And they'll rely, when it comes to a custody issue, heavily on the psychologist, right?
If there's a psychologist involved, but that's an expensive proposition a lot of times. And
very.
So you don't always get a psychologist.
Have you seen a judge ever disagree with a psychologist?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yes.
But that's sort of, to me, interesting, because you got an expert, psychologist, custody evaluator. They give a report, and the judge disagrees. Why would a judge disagree with that?
Well, some judges don't like the custody evaluators. Unless there's fitness issues, unless one parent is like a drug addict or something like that, a custody evaluation is not going to tell you much. They're going to say, okay, these parents are fit, and this is what ought to happen with these kids. But a lot of judges, they disagree. I can think of one specifically, and I admire him, and he's been on the family law bench. He's currently there now. It takes a lot of guts to disagree with a psychologist.
Yeah, that's what I would think.
But he just had a different view of things. Sometimes psychologists have their own agendas, and I can tell you, when it comes to custody evaluators, which ones like joint custody with shared time, and I can tell you which ones like dads. I can tell you which ones like moms. Now, I can't do it with all of them.
Interesting.
But so they all have their propensities, just like judges have propensities. Judges, and they'll deny it all day long, and I may not be right, but I've been doing this long enough, I can kind of give you an idea of the judge's tendencies, what they have a tendency to do. Now, what they'll do in a particular case, man, if I could predict that, I'd be rich. But
so if you have a male client and it's a custody issue, you'll have a list of psychologists, and you go, no, I don't think that one.
Yeah.
That might be more pro, women or whatever.
Oh, right.
Or, women say, no, that might be more pro man.
Or so, if I've got one that says I want this particular outcome, you wouldn't think that that's the way they'd be. And every psychologist in the Valley, anyone listening to me now, is probably all up in arms about it. But but they all do have their tendencies.
Sure.
And so we try, as lawyers, we'll try to steer it in the direction we think is best. Now, it backfires on us frequently. Frequently. That's why I say, if I could predict it, I'd be rich, because I'd advertise it. I can predict it.
And wow, that's incredible. You got a very fascinating job, no question. I should say profession. And it's full of so many different components. And you have to be so good at so much. Not only reading the law, interpreting the law, analytical, but negotiating, communication. I mean, the list goes on and on, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. And then when you're standing in a courtroom and you've got to do it all at the same time, plus listen to your client, listen to the judge, the witness. Your client wants to write you notes as you're in trial.
Yeah.
and the judge is talking to you at the same time. So, yeah, it can be challenging, if nothing
you ever
else.
Have a client stand up and go, objection, and you go, wait, that's your job.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I've actually had a judge look at my client and say, you're represented by an attorney, be quiet.
Really?
Let the attorney talk. That's why you pay them.
And do they usually listen?
Most of the time. I've had one or two clients I've had to look at and tell them to shut up.
Wow, that is scary, isn't it?
Because when they stand up and say objection or talk, they don't necessarily say what's best for them to say.
Oh, gotcha.
So you want them to be quiet.
That's incredible. Let's take a quick break now. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion, a very lively, passionate discussion today. This is really exciting. Of course, we have Joe Collins in the studio. This is the Divorce Show. This is the second part from 3 to 4, a great resource center. Every third Tuesday, 2 to 3, and then 3 to 4. And Joe Collins, of course, collinslaw.net, or you can call him at 602-788-7227. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Your body is the greatest gift that you will ever be given. How well are you taking care of yours? Hey, everyone, this is Journey Reeves, owner of Mind Body Unlimited. More important than time or money, your health is the secret to a truly wealthy life. We can customize an exercise and diet program that greatly enhances your quality of life. If you are sick and tired of feeling sick and tired, give us a buzz at 480-370-7768. That's 480-370-7768 to schedule your free, no-obligation consultation today.
Hirschberger Assisted Living Home for the Elderly, whether it's a need to recuperate after surgery or just need daily assistance to enrich their life, you can trust that your loved one is being well cared for. Our caregivers are fully licensed by the Arizona Department of Health. An experienced team of professionals provide expert medical care, including physical, occupational, and recreational therapy, wound care, medication management, nutritional support, and personal care. All faiths are welcome. Hirschberger Assisted Living Home, founded in 1997, will provide your loved ones a quality of life with loving care. Call Shirley Hirschberger today at 602-314-6937. That's 602-314-6937, or visit the website ahomewithshirley.com. Hirschberger Assisted Living, home is where the heart is.
Are you standing at a crossroad in life wondering what's next? Is it time to reinvent your relationship, your career, your life? Whether you're ready for a reinvention revolution or a reinvention evolution, the support of a couple of great coaches can get you there. When you decide it's time to take your life from just functional to optimal, call Joe and Lori Battaglia of Living the Dream Coaches, 888-505-5762. That's 888-505-5762, or go online to www.livingthedreamcoaches.com. That's www.livingthedreamcoaches.com.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is The Divorce Show, starring Joe Collins from Collins and Columns. I almost said Columns and Columns.
Yeah, a lot of people
but
think
Collins,
that.
Yeah, Collins and Collins, and that's right. collinslaw.net. And, of course, a great firm and really focusing a lot on family law, and
yep.
I think that's very important. Now, we've been talking about the process, also sort of behind the scenes what's happening, but
The seedy underbelly of family
yeah,
law, right?
Which is really, I find really interesting, actually.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah. Anybody that's been through the process, it's interesting to hear. I was going to mention, even on occasions, judges will bring us back into their offices and tell us what they really think.
Really?
Oh, yeah, without going on. And I always enjoy that because it's nice to hear what a judge thinks. So then when I go out to trial, I can say, okay, this is what we need to focus on. And
that's sort of interesting. Is that like a sidebar?
Yeah, kind of. You know, you see them in chambers, which is really his office, but, you know.
Are they usually nice?
Yeah, they're pretty nice. You know, their own little separate bathrooms. And
really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's sort of cool. TVs and stuff?
Yeah, I've never seen a TV, but, you know, I've had some of the judges, they don't like to go out in the courtroom, especially in family law. Their theory of the whole thing is that it needs to be less litigious. So I've had judges kind of hold hearings in their office and have you sit on a couch and, you
really?
Know, bring the court reporter in. Yeah.
Wow, that's sort of cool.
Yeah, I think it is. It's a different look, different perspective on things because, you know, rather than being contentious and at odds with each other, you bring them in, you sit them down. I still remember Judge Nastro. He's retired now, and he was great. He would play classical music during his settlement conferences, not during trials, but he'd play it during a settlement conference, and he'd bring everybody in. He wanted to soothe everybody and calm everybody down. And,
oh, that is so cool.
Yeah, he was always great to be in front of. He didn't like to be in the courtroom as much because, again, it's contentious.
Yeah.
The judge is up sitting high on his bench.
Yeah.
Everybody's nervous sitting behind the chairs. And sometimes it just works to calm everybody down a little bit, not be so contentious. And when I talk about settlement with the client, I try not to have him standing in the room with the other lawyer because something's going to be said that's going to upset him, and then he's not going to want to settle because he's mad about that particular thing, and his focus is separate, so you try to put him somewhere else.
You have to have tremendous people skills, it sounds like, to do it.
Well, I don't know about people skills, but patience sure helps.
Yeah, I would think so. So what do you do until the decree is entered? So we sort of left. Well, there's temporary orders, I guess, becomes.
Yeah, I primed you for that. You know, people get upset because it takes so long to get in front of a judge.
Yeah.
But you can generally get in front of a judge on a temporary order. So before the final decree, you can say, what do we do, judge? Well, if you guys can't agree on what you do, you can ask for temporary orders. Under the statute, it allows you to go and set certain things. We can't agree as to where the kids are going to live or who's going to pay child support. Sometimes it's, you can't live without spousal maintenance for 8 or 9 months.
Yeah.
So the judge will set a very short hearing, half an hour, 45 minutes, maybe an hour and a half, where you can ask for temporary orders. And it's not like a trial. Well, it's similar to a trial, but they try to do an abbreviated, let's get to the issues, what are the facts, without doing the discovery or without having all of the information exchanged, let's try to Band-Aid this until we can get to trial, and that way they're not fighting.
Yeah.
They're not calling the cops about who gets the 4th of July and who gets Christmas and Halloween or whatever other holidays might be out there, you know.
Yeah.
And so the temporary orders are something that, you know, you can get in with pretty quick to get those issues resolved. And it's very important, too. Many times it settles things down. It gives the parties an idea of what the judge kind of thinks. Even though he hasn't seen everything,
yeah,
you know, you get an idea of what he thinks. And then when they start to get in and they're living under the temporary orders, they can get a feel for how it will go. And they sometimes will accept, okay, I can live with this. This is okay. I understand.
Yeah.
You know, and it sometimes calms people down and they can settle the case.
And it cuts down on fights because there's someone overlooking their behavior in a way.
Oh, yes, yes. They know that, yeah, sometime they're going to have to go back to the judge and
explain.
That's right. That's right. Kind of like Mom and I had, I had another judge this morning. He says, you know, it's kind of tough. I'm an adult just like you, and I kind of have to act like I'm telling you what's going on. So it's something like going to the principal's office or, you know, you're in front of Mom and Dad telling you guys need to behave yourselves. So
now some people have heard out there, and I don't know if it's true or not, that if you file first, you have a slight advantage. Is that a myth, or is that, or what would
it,
you take?
It's a myth for the most part. There are some times where I'd say filing first is advantageous, but for the most part, it may be advantageous if you're afraid your spouse is going to take the children and move out of state. Then you need to file because the preliminary injunction prevents anyone from removing a child out of the state.
Oh.
Without permission from the other spouse or a court order. So that preliminary injunction requires that you be nice to each other and so on and so forth. But in the end, there's really no advantage to filing first. When trial is being conducted, either party is on equal grounds. The plaintiff goes first. The petitioner goes first. Maybe that's an advantage because you get to go first. But these judges, they've heard it all.
Sure.
And so, you know, just because you get your story out there first doesn't mean he's going to agree with it. So
is there something in between temporary orders and I guess there's a final decree? Is that the sequence?
Yeah, the final decree comes after trial, if there's a trial. You may not have a trial, maybe just an agreement, and you can do a consent decree. So everybody signs off on it. Judge signs it, never have to go to trial. Saves everybody time and money. But there's discovery. Discovery and disclosure. Discovery is if I ask you to give me certain information and documents. Disclosure is I am required to give you certain information and documents. The idea is let's just let everybody know all the facts of the case so we know what's going on. So we have to divide debts and assets. So in other words, discovery and disclosure, you're going to have to give all your bank statements. You're going to have to give credit card bills. You're going to have to give turnover tax returns, you know, those type of things so that I know what debts exist. Titles to cars, things like that. So I know what assets exist. So I can then sit down and evaluate what's going to happen and apply the law to it and say, okay, if we go to trial, this is a possible outcome. Child support's another issue. So you need to know income. So I get pay stubs, W-2s, those type of things. So it's the idea, it used to be that you filed your complaint, you went to trial, and if you asked for any information, that's all you got. There was no mandatory disclosure. But many years ago, they decided, we're not going to play that game anymore. We want full disclosure. And so you're required to disclose that information. So once you get that information, sometimes it's very little. Sometimes it's a huge stack of documents. And that's sometimes what costs so much money with attorneys is we got to look at it all and see what's there.
Well, plus, I mean, speaking of cost, I suspect in this discovery and document phase, if you have a business, it has to maybe be valued, perhaps.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And that could be a big deal.
It can be. You know, I've known people with multiple businesses. And then sometimes you get a tax return, and I'm not a CPA, but I've learned to read a tax return. But sometimes you need to hire a CPA. Tell me what this means.
Yeah.
You know, we hire CPAs for child support purposes. So somebody's self-employed. Tell me what his income is, because there's a lot of things on paper that are deducted for tax purposes that cannot be deducted for child support purposes. So you really want to look at all that stuff. And I say I've gotten pretty good at reading a tax return, but, you know, they're not short anymore. The 1040 Easies aren't the only thing I get, especially self-employed. So
they can be complex. And how about during this phase, too? Do you tell clients, or are you on the watch for – the opponents eroding the community. That's a no-no, I believe.
That is. The preliminary injunction prevents you from selling assets or dissipating anything in the community, incurring new debt. So you want to make sure that that doesn't happen. I always encourage my clients to kind of keep a journal of things that are going on, because by the time they get to trial, memories aren't always as good.
Yeah.
Write it down. But what's also important is you keep track of what's going on. And it happens very frequently, especially people that have their own business. They'll start buying and selling or moving assets. Or I call it divorce planning sometimes. You know, I think I talked about that last time. Somebody will try to take advantage of the circumstance, and they're self-employed and they own three houses. And during the divorce, they'll sell two of the houses. They'll take the money and give it to their uncle or put it in their business and then buy a new truck or something. That's a no-no. That's not something that's supposed to happen. The preliminary injunction also prohibits you from dropping anyone on insurance. If you've got somebody on insurance, you can't cancel their insurance during that time. So, you know, that's real important, especially if you've got a spouse, you know, who has insurance and their, you know, husband has insurance or wife has insurance and the other party's on that insurance. If you drop them off that insurance, that could be devastating if
they get ill or sick. What would they do?
Well, the court takes it very seriously, and they would require the party who canceled them to pay the bills.
Oh, my. That could be huge.
Yeah, it can be huge. It's cheaper to keep them on insurance than to cancel them.
Oh, that is incredible. Now, what if you just can't afford the insurance anymore?
Well, then you better ask the court in temporary orders to assign somebody to pay that. Otherwise, you're going to have to pay that bill.
There's a lot to this.
Yeah, there is. And that's why I always tell clients, before you do anything, you need to consult with me. You need to tell me if you're going to buy or sell something, if you're going to drop somebody from insurance, call me. We'll talk about it.
Phenomenal.
You know, yeah, and especially kids. I mean, kids have done nothing wrong. You don't want to cancel them from insurance, but once you're divorced from a spouse, you can drop the spouse because you're no longer able to carry them on insurance. But if you do it before then.
That's good advice right there, I got to tell you. Now, a trial. Any advantage ever going to a trial? Or is it usually it's more costly, it would sound like to me.
Right,
But is there ever an advantage?
Oh, definitely an advantage. If the parties can agree, that's generally better, but you want the parties to agree on reasonable terms. Mm. If you have a party that says, look, I want you to take 100% of the debt, give me 100% of the assets, that's unreasonable. Then you'd go to trial in that circumstance. If you've got issues of child custody and one party says, look, I want them, you know, 90% of the time, and I think you're an unfit parent and ought to have supervised visitation, then you... And that's not the case, you probably ought to go to trial. So there are sometimes, and we as attorneys try to say, and really the rule of thumb is, should I settle or should I go to trial? Well, if I can do better at trial, we go to trial. If I can't do better at trial, we should settle. And so that's tough.
Most settle, would you say?
Well, I'd say the majority of cases should settle, little less than the majority do settle. So there are people, there are people that are just flat out unreasonable.
Oh, geez. But that is that somewhat subjective, too, because both attorneys would say, wait, that's unreasonable, and they're both looking at the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
But only when it comes to custody and access, because I'll tell you, the law is very simple when it comes to debts and assets. Community property state, anything acquired during the marriage is community property and is divided equally. That's a no-brainer, but you have parties that don't want that to happen.
Now, if two people, and a lot of listeners may be interested in this, if you have two people that get married and they maintain their separate accounts during that marriage, what they brought into it, that's still separate?
Right. Sole and separate assets, anything acquired prior to marriage. So if I had a retirement account with $100,000 in it and then I got married, that $100,000 is sole and separate unless I convert it to community property. And there are many ways that you can transmute or convert a sole and separate asset into a community asset. So you have to be kind of careful with how you do that.
So if you maintain those accounts, your wages that you had prior, I mean, that you carried into the marriage, but you maintain separate accounts, typically that'd still be separate.
Yes, typically.
Okay, gotcha.
And I always,
it's just that if you commingle it, that
right,
might
right.
be
an issue. Right, right. And that's the big issue that when it comes in, people always say, well, this is in his name, this is in my name. Doesn't matter whose name a particular thing is in. If it's acquired during marriage, it's a community asset.
Gotcha. So. Interesting. Wow, that is amazing. Now, so there's a lot to this particular thing, temporary orders up to the final decree. Now, how about parent education courses? Is that that's a big deal these days, right?
Well, it's a very simple deal, but it's important, I think, because parent information class, the two-hour class to tell you how to behave as it relates to your kids during a divorce.
Oh.
So, I mean, it's very...
That's what it is?
Yep, that's really all it is. It's,
what are some of the highlights?
I've never been to the class.
Oh, like don't yell.
So, yeah, don't yell. Don't bring your kids into the middle of the case. Don't use your children to communicate with your spouse about... you know, important issues. Or like, you know, tell your father he needs to pay child support. That kind
and
of
that,
stuff.
That still happens,
oh,
doesn't
yes,
it?
Oh, yes, frequently. Even after people take the class, it still happens.
Well, that's incredible. So how long is this course, you think?
It's 2 hours. It's generally...
Oh, it's just a two-hour thing.
Yeah, real short. Real short. You know, Dr. Sharon, you know, she probably could tell you more about it than I could. But it's a simple class.
Wow, that's sort of interesting. And don't they have... As part of this, do they have parenting classes as well that are mandatory, or anger management, or so on?
Not mandatory, but the court can order those. Mandatory high conflict resolution classes, mandatory parenting classes, classes to parent teenagers. I probably ought to take those because I've got teenagers at home. So, yeah, there's a lot of information out there for anybody that wants to better themselves. You know, so it's not mandatory. The Parent Information Program class is the only thing that's required before the court can enter a decree. But other than that, there's stuff the court can order.
That's interesting. Now, let me ask you this. We only have maybe 3 minutes left. Boy, this hour flew, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
This is incredible. And how many – have you ever had a client, a repeat client many times with, you know, divorce, gets married again, divorce, gets married again? I mean, is that something
oh, yes.
you see a lot?
Oh, yes. And some of those clients, you get married, divorced, and then they got to come back for modification of the divorce decree. So you get a decree, and then you got to modify to the decree. Yeah, yeah. The joke sometimes is, I got a client that's going to put my kid through college.
Yeah. That's incredible. But, yeah, because with the multiple marriages these days, you're bound to see the client several times.
Oh, yeah.
So is there some planning opportunities you know, like catching them about, you know, 5 years earlier and two divorces earlier.
We'll give you the discount for multiple divorces.
Yeah, you can sell a membership.
There we go. Yeah, the prepaid legal plans are that's what those are for. But no, I just tell them to stay married.
Yeah,
go home and work it out.
That would make sense. I always said that I think it's so easy to get married and tough to get a divorce. It appears they should shouldn't they make it tougher to get married?
They have. Haven't you heard about the new covenant marriage they've got in Arizona?
Oh, I heard about that. We should do a whole show on that, or part of a show.
We can do a part of a show. I'll give you the thumbnail sketch. If you go to counseling, you can only get divorced for cause. Now, you know, with a no-fault divorce, you don't have to. You just have to want a divorce.
Oh, yeah.
Irreconcilable differences. But with a new covenant marriage, you have to have a reason to get divorced.
I heard about that. So you better be really sure, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Because that... is that becoming more popular, do you think? Do you see that?
I haven't, since the law passed, I haven't seen any covenant marriages. But, you know, I'll tell you, having been married for 20 years, it's just easier to resolve the issues than to get divorced sometimes. But the greatest joy and the greatest, you know, misery you'll ever find in life, you'll find in your own family.
Yeah. You know, that's a really nice, I mean, that it makes sense. It's profound, I was going to say. And, that's the key word, profound, and it's sort of bittersweet at the same time sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, that's life, isn't it, as Frank Sinatra said.
Right, that's how it is, and we can be just as happy outside a divorce as we can inside of a marriage, and that's really a personal choice that I don't think anybody should make for anyone else. I think people need to be able to make their own choices. So, but, yeah, we ought to talk a little bit more about those covenant marriages.
And, I'd be interested in that, yes. Yeah. I think others would, too. And I've heard of that before. And, Joe, this has been phenomenal. Thank you so much.
Oh, a lot of fun. Lots of fun.
Absolutely. We'll see you next month, second Tuesday, 3 to 4, the divorce, the second Tuesday of each month, I should say, 3 to 4. Joe Collins, Collins & Collins, great law firm, 602-788-7227. That's 602-788-7227, collinslaw.net. And Joe, thank you. This was informative. It was interesting and very amusing at certain times. I really appreciate it. And we'll see everyone tomorrow with Breakthrough Sports. Go Coyotes tonight, 6 o'clock, jobbing.com arena. Sports talk tomorrow, 2 to 4. Everyone have a great night.
All right.